I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is
Fight Disciples.
Welcome to episode 861 of the Fight Disciples podcast. This is your boxing preview for the weekend ahead. And as you can see, if you're probably listening to this, but more importantly, if you're watching this, as you can see, we are not in our usual locations. Well, actually, I am. It's almost 1 o'clock in the morning on Wednesday. This guy, as you can see, is in a rather bizarre looking hotel room in Viva Las Vegas. First and foremost, what is your hotel room? Why is it so cream? And why does it look like you've doodled on the walls?
On a budget this week, mate. On a budget. Listen.
That's a weird room.
I'm not on your normal time frame where you're kicking off asking for blooming certain types of flights, certain types of accommodation. Let's just say this week we're deep down and dirty. I'm back to my roots here. I'm actually having to carry bags, carry equipment, set equipment up. All sorts of bloody shenanigans is going on here. So regarding this room, I'm just delighted to have a bed, mate. Having said that though, I am. They have upgraded me to a suite, right? So,
not crying poverty now, are we?
No. I've got multiple rooms where I am, and it's all just for me. I'm currently in the dining area of the suite, which is lovely. Nice. I would pick at the end of this podcast, I will pick the camera up and I'll take you on a little bit of a tour of it. I don't want to do it just now because it took me about 10 minutes to set up the visuals and the audio for the podcast, so therefore it can be somewhat. So people can actually understand what's going on with me and the show. So I'll do it at the end, so therefore I don't mess any of the audio and the visuals up, mate. But yes, I am in Las Vegas. I'm out here doing some other work. That sounds bad, that, doesn't it? Sounds like I'm moonlighting, like I've become a brass or something like that. So that's what I'm on with this week, mate. And as you can see, hopefully the sunshine is beaming through. I know that you have... This is unusual. I say unusual. You do go to the nth degree for the Fight Disciples podcast. And for this to be currently, what time is it? 1 o'clock where you are?
Yeah, 1 a.m.
1 a.m. He's still up. He's in his potting shed outside because this was the only time of day that I could actually get on and join the podcast. He's just testament to yourself, mate. I'm just baking here in 25 degree sunshine. That's how I'm rolling out here.
So basically, I've been waiting for the last 2 hours to record this podcast and you've been by the pool. What you're saying.
That's kind of what I've just insinuated, but it's a complete lie. I've been working all day doing bits at the UFC. And now I'm here, ready to rock and roll, mate. I've been in Las Vegas for 24 hours. I've not had a pint yet.
What?
I know.
Have you had a cottage pie?
Nope. I went to bed when I got in.
Jesus.
I know. What's
going on? Out there on your own.
I was thinking of making like a daily diary, and all it would be is just me on my own with sad music in the background going, where's the instigator? I need the one that gets me into trouble. It's like
those stills from, what's the movie about the Colombian drug lord? And he's just like sitting on a swing.
Pablo. That's me. People will be making memes of me this week, just Pablo, like, looking out into an empty swimming pool, nothing going on.
Oh, mega. It makes me laugh. Listen, we'll be back there in 3 weeks.
Yeah, you don't care whatsoever. You're like, when this call came in, you went going, what are you doing? You're doing what? What are you doing it? What? All right, okay. I could see in your voice there was a little bit of, Oh, but then when I explained further what the job was, and now that you've obviously, you know what I'm up to out here, you're like going, ah, fuck him. Leave him to it, mate. You know what I mean? Give us a shout when he's UFC 300.
Correct. Exactly. Without a doubt. Listen, that is MMA chat. This is not for this show.
No.
This is our boxing chat show, and obviously there's a big card here in the UK to preview coming up. But first and foremost, I want to ask you about some news, the newsy bits.
You can tell it's 1 o'clock in the morning. You're delirious, aren't you?
Honestly,
plus we're doing different roles. Look at this
cheese board to keep me going. I just been on a cheese board at 12:30 on a Wednesday, just to keep me fueled and going.
Hey, fair play, mate. Fair play.
Well, listen. Canelo. First thing I want to talk to you about is Canelo Alvarez, because all of the headlines over the last 24 hours have been associated with two things: rematch clauses and absolutely pricing himself out of a fight with Benavidez. You're there, man. You're in the heartbeat. You're in the prize fighter gangland where Canelo made his millions. What's the word on the street in Vegas?
Nobody's talking to me about Canelo in Vegas at the moment, man. What the fuck are you going on about? Nobody's stopping me going, whoa. Come here, you. I want to talk to you about Canelo. I don't think anybody gives a shit.
But regarding him, Munguia.
Regarding him, just clarify what are the terms of this rematch clause? Because I've seen that it's like, is it a one-way thing? Is that what he's doing?
It's a one-way thing, and it's obviously an associated draw or a loss. Obviously, in favour of Munguia, the loss, and Canelo gets his rematch clause, but Munguia has no room for a rematch clause at all. Yeah, correct.
So that's obviously to get his championship belts back or something. Listen, man, if that's what it takes to get a Canelo fight over the line, then fair enough. We spoke about this extensively, didn't we, at the weekend when we were talking about a good card in Birmingham, in particular the Liam Davis fight. Liam Davis was fighting Ayala Robles, which we all said, great fight, forget the trinket. I know that it was being billed as it's a world title fight, IBO, all the bollocks, not interested whatsoever in what that was. We knew, as people that watch a lot of boxing, and people that obviously consume our stuff who watch a lot of boxing, they knew it was a good fight. They didn't need a trinket. And I think that when you look at Canelo Munguia, you know that that's a good fight. It's not the fight. Don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here going, yay, this is... The fight was Benavidez. We'll come on to that in a minute. Munguia is a great second. It's much better than Charlo. It's much better than all the other tripe that was being bounded our way. Munguia's a real test. There's a little bit of that Mexican flavour as well that is thrown into the pot. As well. Yes, Munguia is a man from weight divisions below, but he has made that step up, and I thought he's looked all right as he's made those step up, and he looked good last time out, didn't he, at 168. I think regarding the rematch clause aspect of it, I think it's kind of what you have to do in order to dance to Canelo's tune, because he's the kingmaker and that's where the money's at. For me, I couldn't give a shit about it. If Munguia goes in there and beats him in good fashion, it's obviously a shame that we've got to go and do it again. But we've just seen what happened to a rematch clause with Crawford and Spence. It got whizzed in the bin because you got your ass kicked. Canelo, I personally still believe, is in that top five, top six, pound for pound in the world. And I think on his day, he would take care of Munguia, because Munguia is very, very hittable. So I don't think it's even going to come into fruition. I just think it's one of those things that you whiz into a contract in order to keep the king happy, in order to get it over the line. I'm excited about the fight, mate. I like the fight. You know, I would be more excited about a David Benavidez fight, don't get me wrong. But May the 4th, Cinco de Mayo weekend, Canelo versus Munguia. Yeah, I'm in.
I don't think it takes anything necessarily away from that fight, because I think you're a fool if you don't think that 90% of Canelo's fights over the last 3 or 4 years, especially, probably all had exactly the same rematch clause type, because Canelo's the guy that's not got most to risk, because he's still earning incredible sums of money, but you're getting a career-best payday to take on the number one attraction outside of the heavyweight division, and you're making more money than ever, and he's just kind of ensuring himself. I'm not a fan of it. I think rematch clauses, we've talked about it extensively, should be absolutely put in the bin. But it's not necessarily unusual either. You know, even in UFC, you know, you've generally got to beat the established champions twice. You've generally got to beat the top men twice, haven't you, to make sure you get it over the line. We've seen that traditionally. The difference is there is no rematch clause involved, but there's an unspoken, well, he has been undefeated for the best part of 8 years, so you beat him, chances are you're going to have to beat him again. We've seen it at the moment with Volkanovski. We've seen it with many fighters.
Yeah. You're 100% right with that. It is unwritten, and it's kind of respected within martial arts. And I don't think anybody who follows the UFC has a beef with that. Volkanovski's done whatever Volkanovski's done over a period of time. He's been beaten by Ilya Topuria in emphatic style. Let's be honest about it. He was emphatic. Does he deserve a rematch? Most people, I think, who follow that sport would say yes. Does the fight itself warrant a rematch? Probably not. I just think that rematches in sport in general should be dictated to by the original fight. That's what it should be. And the fans should make that decision as to whether we get it or not. Do you want to see it again? Mate, that first one was a belter. It's like what you said on Monday's show with Nathan Heaney and Brad Paulus. It's a belter. Obviously, we ended up with a draw, contentious ending. That's what dictates whether we go again, not what is preconceived in a contract just to get the first fight over the line.
I think the difference when there's a contract involved as well, just to move on for this or certainly bring the Benavidez elements into it, is the difference in the UFC is you beat the guy and there's a fan demand and there's a legacy demand that the rematch happens, and then you sit down and you renegotiate what you're getting for the rematch. I can bet your bottom dollar that this rematch clause that has been put in front of Munguia, it's already states exactly what he will financially receive if he beats Canelo Alvarez. So it puts you in a position where you can't go, well, actually, I got $5 million for the Canelo fight, but I've just beat Canelo.
And become undisputed.
Because that's what you're doing. Middleweight champion. Now I could go Bivol in Saudi Arabia, who's just beat Bataviev, and the Saudi's going to offer me $10 million. But actually, in the contract to fight Canelo, it said I've got to do the rematch, and the rematch is the same money as the first fight, $5 million that I got first time around. That's what's absolutely negative about it, of course. I touched on Benavidez there because I think the bigger story, the bigger the headline, is this. I want $150-200 million to fight Benavidez. It's like, when did Canelo turn into a bitch? When did Canelo turn into a pussy that's running away from fights?
You got big, haven't you? You've got
he's faced himself out of a fight. That's the biggest fight in the sport for him right now. That's not the Canelo that most recently, over the last few years especially, we've come to know and love. That's Canelo being a bitch.
It's odd language from him, isn't it? To say that the only reason or the only way that that fight happens is if a promoter comes in and does me $150 million, $200 million. That's the only way that I would fight David Benavidez. David Benavidez is the fight. We know that that is the fight. And I know that Canelo can refer back to history, who he's been in with, what he's done, and who he's done it against. Yeah, you're right, mate. Listen, you've never run. You've taken on the toughest challenges. You went through that 168 division when they were all champions, and you called them all out and you brought them all in and obviously made the undisputed status, and we celebrated it, absolutely. But you need to call it straight. You've got credit. You've definitely got history, and we will pay homage to that history. But you can only respond to what is happening to the here and now. When you're saying that you want 150 million quid to take on the best guy in your division, you've got to expect shit from fans.
Exactly.
You've got to expect shit from fans. Is it maybe he's making a power play to make that fight happen in Saudi Arabia? Maybe. I don't know. Because it's not traditional Canelo. Canelo doesn't run. Canelo doesn't, you know, duck the challenges. Canelo takes on the toughest guys. And history would obviously prove what I've just said to be true. But this don't look good. It don't look good. Because you sign with PBC. He's a PBC fighter. It's an obvious fight to make. There's probably going to be a second one because the first one will be a cracker. The noise isn't good, mate. It just doesn't sound good from Canelo's camp to make those noises. And I just hope that they can make that fight happen. Because if he doesn't make that fight happen, it's always going to be, once he's long gone, it's always going to be that conversation, is it, where people are going to say, well, didn't fight Benavidez, did he? Why did he not fight Benavidez?
Yeah. Maybe. Listen, I would have no issue whatsoever. If Canelo, because look at the body of work, Jesus Christ, who he's beaten. I would have no issue whatsoever if Canelo just went, listen, man, I've wiped out the super middleweight. I've done this. I've done that. I've done this. I've tried light heavy. I'm not interested in Benavidez thing. I'm going to do this Munguia thing. Then I'm going to look at light heavyweight. It's about my legacy. But it's the fact that he's gone against everything he said previously about legacy, about being the greatest Mexican of all time, about leaving this incredible, you know, story in boxing. It's, oh, the numbers need to be this now. Numbers that no one has ever realistically touched. So he's priced himself out of the best opponent.
Given the fact his current deal was, what, $35 million guaranteed? And yes. Now we're talking $150 million.
Because it's not $150 million opponents. No. And Benavidez knows that. Everyone knows that. But that's not what Canelo's been about. Canelo didn't go, oh, I'm not going to unify at super middleweight. What's the point? Billy Joe Saunders, Callum Smith, and these guys, and a Yildirim thing, and where's the money there? There's not... Nah, that wasn't what he was about. He was about the legacy, fighting Dmitry Bivol. Let's be honest, as good as Bivol is, he put Bivol on the map by fighting Bivol and getting beat by him. So it wasn't about the money then. But suddenly, because this guy is it because he's a Mexican? Is it because Canelo actually thinks, shit, you know what?
He's good.
He's the toughest. Looking around now, he's the toughest thing on this mountain because... It's not like losing it like and they go, oh, well, come on, it ain't my weight. This guy is my weight. And this guy's coming hungry. So I don't think it's a good look for Canelo, man. I don't think it's a good look at all.
No, it isn't. Listen, I hope it's a power play. I hope it's a power play. Yeah. And your mate in Saudi Arabia sticks his hand in his pocket. He goes, go on, Canelo, come over here, sunshine, and let's make that fight happen. Because we all want to see it. It is the fight. But again, just as a caveat, May the 4th against Munguia, I'm actually happy with it. As a consolation prize, I'm actually like, yeah, cool, man. That's all right.
Uncle Turkey is putting his hand in his pocket, not surprisingly, for another heavyweight matchup. And this time it is Filip Hergovic taking on Daniel Dubois, heavily rumored for June the 1st in Saudi Arabia. After Dubois' last performance and that win, we did say on the podcast a great opponent now would be Filip Hergovic. I hope they go down the Hergovic route. And we didn't know then where AJ's head was at, whether AJ was going to try and do the Hergovic, pinch the IBF belt bollocks. But I think now with the rhetoric fully being AJ fights the winner of Usyk versus Fury, I think that's free. I think everybody outside of those three heavyweights has basically gone, well, it's no good waiting for the belts to be splintered because the belts ain't worth shit no more. So you want to do it? You want to do it? You want to do it? Do you want to be the best of the rest until this dust settles and maybe there's one less standing, then we get a shot at that? Maybe that's what's happening now in the heavyweight division.
I think it's a good fight. I think Hergovic against Dubois is a good fight. And if they make that and that goes down the route, I would imagine that that's going to fall then as part of Matchroom versus Queensbury, isn't it? Because Filip Hergovic, even though he's co-promoted by Matchroom, I know he's a Kalasaulan guy, isn't he? But they could probably claim that as one of their guys. Dubois is obviously a Queensbury guy. I think that works out to sit on the undercard of Beterbiev and Bivol. I think a lot of fans would be in on that. And as a fight, from a hardcore fan point of view, you look at that and you think, that's perfect logic. Dubois, as the penny finally dropped with Dubois, he's had some tough times. Fans have looked at him going, when you turn the heat up on him, he goes, mate. Well, I'll tell you what, Hergovic will turn the heat up on him. So let's see if that is actually still true. Let's see what the crack is with that. He's coming off the back of a good win. Hergovic, I mean, what can you say about the Mark Demory fight? I mean, what even was that? You know what I mean? Exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, and for Hergovic, you've got to stay relevant, haven't you? You've got to stay relevant in the division because it is changing. Sanctioning bodies, number one statuses, mandatories, and all this type of carry-on are becoming a little bit more irrelevant, which is a good thing, in my opinion, as long as we get to see best versus best. Best versus best is what every single fight fan wants to see. Filip Hergovic, if he earns the right by beating a Daniel Dubois and making a lot of noise, and the fans want to see him fighting an Anthony Joshua down the line, great stuff. But for the time being, as you've just said, with all the championships and the main fight kind of taking everybody's attention, it's good to see other heavyweights fighting each other. And I think Hergovic and Dubois makes an awful lot of sense.
Winner fights Joe Parker.
Winner fights Joe Parker. Well, what's AJ going to do in the interim?
Yeah.
What's it? AJ can't sit. AJ's the king of his own castle. He dances to his tune now, and that's the noise that I like about AJ. Activity's been really good for him. Don't sit and wait for Tyson Fury and Alexander Usyk. Don't sit around for that, mate. Get cracking. Go and fight Joseph Parker. Because you can frame all arguments in so many different ways, can't you? AJ is on the resurgence. AJ is looking good. AJ is exciting again. He's got as excited, hasn't he? He's reignited our excitement for maybe a possible matchup with Tyson Fury. Or, in some circles, people are going, maybe even a third with Usyk. You know what I mean? People would support those types of things. But in reality, he's beaten Otto Wallen. Did it great, don't get me wrong. And it was a proper fight, no doubt about that. But he's beaten Otto Wallen, and he's beaten a guy that has never won a boxing match in Francis Ngannou. That's what he's done. Yeah. And he's done it emphatically, and he's got us all excited, but that's what he's done. Right, okay. Whilst his confidence and all this is soaring through your system, let's go and fight another really confident, capable boxer, former world champion in Joseph Parker. Why don't we go and do that?
We've got history as well.
And let's see. Yeah, they've got a bit of history because the first fight didn't catch fire. It wasn't attractive, but I think they're two completely different fighters now. Especially yeah. Joseph Parker, he's developed since he was champion, hasn't he? So I wouldn't be against, if we're going to get Fury Usyk, which we all want, and it's brilliant, fingers crossed, and they go again, that ties up that division, ties up everything. AJ's not going to be in that mix. He's got to fight someone. Go and fight Joseph Parker. And then, like you've just said, Ergovic Dubois, if that's great, then the winner of AJ Parker maybe could meet Ergovic and Daniel Dubois, because I would think, even though I'm not asked about it, I would think that the second Fury Usyk fight, belts are going to be fragmented. I don't think that'll be undisputed. I think that what we would class as the alphabet group, they're all going to get amongst it, aren't they? And all going to say, well, hang on a minute, we need our guys involved with this and we need our guys involved with that. And maybe that IBF belt becomes available for that a little bit later down the line. You know, I'm not arsed about it. I couldn't give a shit about it. But
no, yeah.
That might be the sell for the promotion team. I don't know.
I think the way Uncle Turkey is doing this heavyweight division by design now is to get rid of all those fuckers, isn't it?
I hope so.
Of all those belts, those three percenters, because that's the whole point of bringing Undisputed together, that you lash them fuckers in the bin. No more invitations, and you crack on with one singer, one song in the heavyweight division. That's what everybody wants. That's what everybody wants in boxing. So hopefully that is the case. You mentioned his name there, actually, Francis Ngannou. Speaking of the governing body, he's no longer ranked in the top 10 by the WBC. Did anyone give up in the first place? Should Francis be worried? And is that really the end of Francis in boxing? Do you think? MMA now, the big Francis, or do you think he's got one last dance left in him? Can you sell him? That's it. Can you sell him to a boxing audience again? Or convince an MMA audience to cross
over? Just a minute. I don't think you can sell him to the hardcore audience because we've been proven right. We told you what the situation was. We told you that it was a circus. We told you that a guy coming out of an elite other sport, stepping into the sweet science against elite guys that know the sweet science, is going to find it difficult. Listen, he had his moment, didn't he, in the Tyson Fury show for many reasons, yeah, of which have now been proven by Anthony Joshua, right? Can you sell it again? I think you can sell it again to the casual audience. I don't think you can sell it to the hardcore because we know what's going to happen. But if you get the right dance partner, Deontay Wilder, maybe, mm-hmm, you could probably sell that as the hardest hitters. Because Deontay Wilder's not come out of his fight with Joseph Parker smelling of roses, has he? There's a lot of doubts in and around him. Where's he at? Is his head right? Is he still in the game? Is he still an elite heavyweight that was knocking out this man, all these fellas? Tyson Fury, I believe, gave an interview this week where he said, yeah, I've been in with both of them, and Deontay Wilder's definitely the hardest hitter. All right, he's a man that would absolutely know. So that's given a little bit of credit and kudos to Deontay Wilder. But other people might doubt that. They might look at Francis Ngannou and all the, I don't want to say excuses because I love Francis to pieces, but I have seen some of his interviews in the last week or so where he's talking about, yeah, I was tired, I was falling asleep, the fight was on too late, all these bits and bats. I think you can sell one more to the casual audience if it's the dance partner like Wilder.
Yeah.
But I think the hardcore audience know full well that if you put him in with a proper boxer, he's going to get his ears boxed off.
Yeah, I think we're staring into the abyss now of a fights the winner of Jake Paul, Mike Tyson kind of world with Francis in terms of boxing. The problem you've got with Francis is his other option, of course, is go back to his number one sport, which is mixed martial arts. And in MMA, the PFL, who he's contractedly assigned to now, who he's part of the board of, and he's got quite a high-powered role within it, fighter liaison officer or whatever. His contract with them was to pay him a certain amount, but guarantee his opponent $2 million. Mm. This is astronomical money for an organization like the PFL, which is basically, you know, second division football compared to the Champions League that is the UFC. So even transitioning back to MMA, it's not clear and obvious what he does next. I don't think he will. You know, I know you said this previously about him having this mentality, and his dream was always to be heavyweight champion, and he ain't going to boxing champion, and he ain't going to want to go out like this. He doesn't want this to be his boxing legacy. So I do think we will see Francis again in some of the guys. The problem Francis has got is you can sell. I agree with you. You can sell me Deontay Wilder. The two biggest punches walking planet Earth. Mm. Who lands first kills. Let's go. Let's see what happens. You can sell me that, and I'll buy in on that as a boxing fan. But look at anybody else in the top 50. They're all more than capable of outboxing Francis Ngannou. You know, the Olympic champion, Jelavich, who we've seen, he would outbox his head off. Zhili Zhang would take him apart and knock him spark out. Joe Joyce, okay, he looked, unfortunately, even slower than ever before last week. But ultimately, he finds that big shot to finish the fight. Maybe that's the fight. Maybe Joe Joyce is the fight because you know you're going to land at some stage. If he lands clean, then obviously Francis can knock anybody out. But I think it's going to be difficult for him. I think he's got one last pop if he's lucky. And even that one last pop, it ain't. You struggle to see a main event, even in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah. Just on this whole scenario, because the original thread of conversation that you brought up there was the WBC dropping him to whatever it is that they dropped him out of the top 10.
Yeah.
First and foremost, it was a farce that they put him in the top 10. It was greed. Greedy, greedy, greedy Maurizio and his mates. Because all they were after was the possibility of Francis Ngannou doing something against Anthony Joshua, so therefore they could sanction a world title fight with him in it, of which then they could all make a load of coin. That's the only reason he put him in it. Think about it. A guy that had never boxed before went in a fight, lost. Some of us said it was close, some of us said he won it, but he lost. He was 0-1, and they put him in the top 10 above fighters with winning records, people that were fighting proper fights, and people paying their sanctioning fees. That is disgusting. They've got what they deserved, and I hope that all those fighters that saw that, that are paying the sanctioning fees with WBC, go, fuck off.
Fuck off. Yeah.
Fuck off, mate. I'm not fighting for you lot, like Amanda Serrano's done, because they won't even entertain the conversation about 3-minute rounds for her. They're not helping the sport go forward. She's told them to fuck off, and I support that. She's still the undisputed champion. I don't give a shit who holds that belt. She's still the queen in her division. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And I just hope that other fighters that saw and got overlooked because of them getting a bit greedy, getting on the Francis train, sticking him in their rankings so therefore they could try and sanction a legitimate world title fight for him. I hope they all go, nah, fuck off, man. You're not having my 3% jog on.
Yes, exactly. And Maurizio and his entire family that have been sucking millions out of this sport for decades, that family business. And they're not the only one. They're all as bad as each other.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal. Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Anyway, any more news you want to pick up on before we have a look at this card in Sheffield on Saturday night? Sheffield Arena, baby.
News-wise, no, I think the main story is obviously it's good to see Canelo and Munguia do their face-offs. Yes, I know that there's been lots of chatting around Canelo and the Benavidez thing. And Big Francis is always going to be a talking point, isn't it? Just to finish on Francis, maybe I'm speaking purely emotional from this because I love him. I love everything about him. I love his story. I love everything that he's just epitomises. I hope he does have another go at boxing. Why come? You didn't come this far just to come this far, did you, mate? You know what I mean? You've cracked the game in UFC. You've cracked the game. There's nothing else for you to achieve. You've highlighted it there. You go back to the PFL. What's the fight? Henan Ferreira? Okay, he's looked all right. He's looked impressive. You've beaten better guys than Henan Ferreira already in your MMA career. So what are you going back to achieve in PFL, unless it's just to appease your paymasters and appease the contractual obligation that you've got with them? This is about you, Francis. You left the UFC to be the king of your own castle, to dance to your own tune. And if it's in your heart and you think to yourself, do you know something? I didn't come into this game just for that. I've come to legitimise myself as a boxer and get a legit win. Keep going, pal. Keep going. But I genuinely do believe from a sales point of view, there is only one fight and that is Deontay Wilder.
I just pictured Francis with his headphones in, running through whatever city he's in at the moment.
Listening to me. Maybe.
Listening to Fight Disciples, listening to your pep talk there.
Yes.
He's right, man. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to chase my dream. I love it.
I don't think Francis needs any pep talk from anybody. I think he's got enough self-motivation to crack on with whatever it is that he wants to do.
I'll tell you what did happen as well in the last 24 hours. Obviously, the Munguia, this was at the Munguia Canelo press conference. Afterwards, they spoke to, some of the media spoke to Oscar De La Hoya, who represents Jaime Munguia, and they asked him about the mental health and the physical well-being of Ryan Garcia at the moment. Obviously, we talked about Ryan on Monday. We picked up on a lot of his social media interactions. And Oscar De La Hoya was very blasé about it. Was like, yeah, man, he's all good. He's fine. He's training hard. He's locking himself away. Don't worry about it. He's got ready. And they've had a very unusual relationship the entire time they've been together anyway. They seem to be at loggerheads, knocking each other more than they support one another. Just wondering what you made of that and what you make of... Because I watched a video the other day where he just broke down in tears, Ryan Garcia, on his social media. And he was talking about God and he was like, you know, he was listening to a song, like a gospel song or something. And he's live on social media and he's... Tears are flooding down his face because his body's just so full of love and he hopes everybody else feels the same way. And it is all very Oliver McCauley, isn't it?
This kid is crying out for help. Now, I've come to that conclusion that he's crying out for help because originally I took a step back because I was critical of the actions of Teofimo Lopez, some of the things that he was saying in the build-up to the Josh Taylor fight. And I thought, I got that massively wrong because when Tio stepped inside that ring... He was the calmest person in the whole building. His world were on fire. There's loads of things going on. He's saying some things that I thought, oof, geez, man, that's maybe you shouldn't be fighting if that's where your head's at. But he went in there and proved me and all those that critiqued him building into that fight that maybe said that he shouldn't be fighting. Absolutely wrong. So I took a step back from the Ryan Garcia thing because sometimes fighters, they need to fight in order to have some type of calmness in their life, don't they? Everything else is chaotic. They can't control that, but when they're inside the ring, they can control it. That's when they feel that they're... Yeah, exactly. It's home to them. This has gone further than I expected it to go now with Ryan. Like, I keep seeing these videos popping up and It's getting really... From a fight fan's point of view, boxing has a duty of care to everybody that participates in it. As if you're the promoter... In this fight, I know there's a lot of dough in it. Broadcaster, I know there's a lot of dough in it. I know that every single one of us wants to see it. Yes, we're all going to be incredibly disappointed if the brakes are pumped on this fight for Devin Haney and Ryan Garcia. right now, I think it's the right thing to do. I'm not saying cancel it. I'm saying, whoa, hang on a minute. Just stop. Where are you at, lad? Because all the signs that you are giving off don't feel good. We might be wrong, but it don't feel good. Let's just take a breath. Let's get you checked out. Let's get you some help. Let's get you in a situation where some professionals can have a look at you and go, I don't think it's right for him to fight right now. Or maybe they go, nah, you've got this wrong, lads. He's absolutely bang on. But something needs to be done. Some action needs to be taken. We can't just let him crack on because we're all gagging for a fight, or we're all going to be making dough off it. That's not right. Come on, man. You can see what he's fine.
Don't worry about it. He's fine. He's going to be all right.
Is he? Because the signs he's giving off, mate, are not the signs of a guy that's fine. That's all I'll say. Like I said, I've been wrong before. I might be wrong in this situation. I want to see the fight, but I don't want to see the fight at any cost. I want the lad to be right. I want the very best version of Ryan Garcia to go into the fight with Devin Haney. And I'm sure Devin Haney wants the very best version of Ryan Garcia, because what's the worth of it for Devin Haney if he goes in there and beats up a guy that is tortured? You know what I mean? Yeah. And not in the right headspace. Nothing in it for him.
If he were to pull out, I don't think anyone would disagree that Ryan Garcia is the type of fighter that once he got himself sorted, once he did get into a happy place, he'd be straight back going, right, okay, I'm ready now. Shakur Stevenson stepped in. Well, I'll just face the winner then. You know, it is worrying. I don't know.
It's because he's got a history of it. He's come out in the past, hasn't he? And he said, listen, man, I've struggled. I'm taking a step away. I'm doing this to get myself right at such a young age. Okay. We're now back in that situation, but we're doing it publicly now.
Yeah, but that was... Is Ryan's brother's come out and gone, he's not in a good place, he needs help, he needs support.
Right then. Let's listen to his family.
His girlfriends or his ex-wife or whatever she is, she's raised concerns as well. The people around him aren't the right people and all this
stuff. Right, they know him then. They know him. Yeah. They know him better than any of us.
Yeah.
So we should be listening to him.
Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. Anyway, hopefully Ryan does get himself sorted out. And listen, if he has to pull out, then Shakur Stevenson steps in. Boxing still wins anyway. Come and look to the fights this weekend, then, or the fight this weekend, the event this weekend. Quick nod to Steve Woods, who's got a wicked Central Area card going on in my hometown on Saturday night. Steve Wood, in fact, I don't know if you've seen it, VIP promotion.
Yes.
Got a big boost this week with the new executive on the board. That is Mr. Josh Warrington. They also got two other financial cash injections from two other executives that are coming on board. The noises of the VIP are really positive, and I couldn't be happier. We've spoken many times about these, and I don't want to disrespect in any way by saying small hall promoters, but let's say promoters off TV, mainstream TV promoters like Steve Wood that have been here for generations and don't get the love and support and the cash back that they absolutely deserve for being the foundation of British boxing. But the moves here feels like VIP is on the cusp of a deal, a TV deal, where it's going to be a lot more visual and have a lot more growth, whether that's with The Zone, whether that's with Frank's reincarnation of Box Nation, wherever it may be. Or maybe it's the fucking BBC, I don't know. But it just feels like VIP are like about to go, pieces are in place, right, you ready for this? Ta-da! Hello, Will. And it couldn't happen to a guy.
Lovely man, isn't he? Just honest. Straight down the line. I've had many conversations with Steve Wood over the years, and I think to myself, yeah, mate, you deserve, if that's the path that this is at going down, that you've just said there, yeah, man. Well, I think everybody would support that and be all in, and I'm sure that people would wish him, well... From what you've just said there, I'll take a step back and have a little bit of a think, and I think, well, The Zone are having a little bit of a delve into these type of shows, aren't they? So
absolutely.
Maybe that's something. And like you've just said, Frank's reincarnated Box Nation. Maybe they need some content. Great. Fantastic, man. Brilliant, if that's where we're going.
Anyway, quick shout out for that one. That's in Liverpool on Saturday, and it's Jake Harrison taking on Logan Richardson. Two undefeated fighters for the Serbia bantamweight title.
Can I just say something, right? We're obviously doing different roles here because you're in control of the show, with me being out here and I'm doing this on a can and a couple of strings.
Yeah.
You proper change your demeanor when you go into presenter mode, don't you? I'm watching you.
I'm going, professional.
Who is this guy here? He hasn't swore yet. He hasn't done anything. He hasn't done any Nick Peterisms.
Yeah. This is my presenter role, you see. Kind of a big
right,
deal then. These days.
Maybe all right, go on then. Okay.
Anyway.
Yes.
This weekend, British Box returns to one of the fights of the year last year. Sheffield Arena, kids. That's home of Lee Wood versus Josh Warrington. One of the highlights of last year now hosts an absolute stalking main event. Dalton Smith, undefeated Dalton Smith, will be asked some serious questions by multiple-time world title contender Jose Zepeda. I think it's a sensational main event. I think it's got a very strong co-main event. It's got a sweet and delicious all-British women's world title fight there as well. And bum, bum, bum. Just to add a little bit of meat to the bones, we've also got a lovely little central area super lightweight title as well, which has actually got me interested with young Campbell Hatton in a proper little fight. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to the show at the weekend. Really good to the Zone show. It's an Eddie show. But let's be honest, the real reason people are tuning in is Dalton Smith ready for this level of step up? Because even though Zepeda has lost three world title fights, one non-world title fight, been around the block many times, very experienced, got some absolutely massive wins on that record as well. By the way, timing is everything. Have they done this perfectly right for Dalton Smith to announce himself on a world stage? Or has Dalton bit off more than he can chew? That's the question. This main event will provide answers.
Roll the dice, man. Listen, we've been fans of Dalton Smith since he turned over. I was at his debut when he turned over. He came with a lot of hype from the amateur game, and we knew that he was going to go on to do something. It took a little bit of time, I think, with the matchmaking. I think it's taken a little bit of a time for it to grow and him to maybe settle in to being a pro. He's ready. Let's go, man. It feels very similar to when the McGuigans put Josh Taylor in with Victor Postol. And we all took a step back and went, don't know, man.
Yeah.
And look what Josh did on that particular night. And then he rose again and rose again. And along the way, he was asked plenty of questions of which he answered. And he's still answering. And this is the moment now for Dalton Smith. He's had, 15 professional fights. He's undefeated through. There's been some fantastic performances. There's been some ones that you're thinking, oh, I don't know there. He's come through. He's here now. And I think Jose Zepeda is just brilliant matchmaking because he is that guy that has been in multiple world title fights, but he himself has fallen short at that top level. Dalton's got ambitions of being the top guy. So...
yeah.
He's young enough, Zepeda, to still be relevant enough. So then he's not washed. It's not gone. It's a proper fight. He's been at the top, but he's fallen short. I think this is as good as a test that it can possibly get for Dalton Smith before he tries an assault on something major. I know that people will look at me and say, well, maybe, you know, European title level or this and that. Listen, we're talking about an elite amateur that's got it. He's got it. You know he's got it. You've seen him. Let's see what he's like in with a proper classy operator in John Zepeda on Saturday night. I think it's going to be brilliant, mate. And I genuinely think we're going to get a moment like we got with Josh Taylor and Victor Postol. I think with Dalton, that iron is going to sharpen him even further. He's going to have fear factor. He's going to have that stuff that goes round, that adrenaline's pumping around where he has to be sharp all the way through it. And I think he's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, listen, it's not, obviously, it's not Zepeda's first time to the UK, though. The first time he was over here, I was ringside that night in Manchester when he fought Terry Flanagan.
Yeah, Terry Flanagan.
And he was pulled out on him after two rounds or something, and he's popped his shoulder. But obviously, since then, he's been away and he's had massive wins. You know, he's a massive star in Mexico. He had a big run right through the lockdown, if you remember, beating up people like Baranchik and all that. These are fighters on a completely different level than anything that Dalton has faced before. Baranchik, Henry Lundy, Vargas, like these are solid fighters. Yeah, And then, of course, you had the loss to Regis Prograin in a world title fight. That was only 2 years ago. That was after the fact that he'd already lost to Ramirez in the meantime as well. These are his world title losses. So those three world title losses. Do you think that the deciding factor in taking this risk now is on the back of his fourth defeat, though? Because it's the fourth defeat that's the most important for many reasons.
Of course, of course.
The first most important reason is it was his last performance. And you're only as good as your last performance. Time out, he got outboxed by Richardson Hitchens, who is basically an American version of Dalton Smith. He's a rising superstar with world title aspirations. So it's the timing right now for Dalton to do the same thing. The risk here is the fact that, do you get the shine? Richardson Hitchens beat him and everyone went, shit, Richardson Hitchens is going to be a world champion. So look what he's just done, just outboxed a payday. He's world class. He's brilliant. Whereas now Dalton's getting the version of Jose Zepeda that people are now starting to question, to go, well, he's just lost to a young guy. Now he's going to lose to another young guy. That glow has gone off him. That shine has off Zepeda a little bit. And is that detrimental to Dalton Smith, or does that matter? Will Dalton still get the shine of going, mate, don't care what form he's on, that's still Zepeda, and he's still only 34. That's a fantastic win.
He'll get the shine on here, mate. He'll get the shine on here. We know what that. If he wins at the weekend and he wins in great fashion, he'll definitely get shine off us. There's no doubt about it. I understand what you're saying, that other people say, well, he's obviously on his way down now, Zepeda, isn't he? Well, maybe. And you, as you said, timing is everything. This is this massive step up for Dalton Smith at the weekend. And he's got to go and show out in front of his fans on Saturday night. And he's got to really punch his ticket to be talked amongst the elite 140s in not just in the UK, which he already is, but around the world. Richardson Hitchens, like you said, put in a good performance. And he came out with a victory against Zepeda. It's over to Dalton Smith now. Go and make the noise that we all believe that you can go and make, because once you make that noise and beat someone like a Jose Zepeda, there's no looking back. You're not coming back down to the domestic level. You're off to the stars, aren't you? So I hope he gets the shine. He definitely will get the shine from, I think, a lot of people within the industry. I can understand if other people come and say, well, Zepeda's not Zepeda, is he? Listen, Zepeda's still Zepeda, mate. And this is absolutely the biggest challenge of Dalton Smith's career so far.
Yeah, I fear a Monday morning where we're like, bloody hell, how good is Richardson Hitchens? You know, even if Zepeda makes it incredibly difficult, I think he makes it incredibly difficult. In fact, you know, I think Zepeda for me is the favourite going into this fight, absolutely. But I've got a feeling Monday morning we might be sitting doing this, doing a podcast or Tuesday, depending on your travel time. Richardson Hitchens ultimately becomes the ultimate winner here because he was outstanding against Zepeda, but Zepeda was like, listen, made bad day at the office. That won't happen again. Right, let's go to the UK to fight another undefeated rising star. Just fought one. Right, you know what? I owe the UK one. And I'm going to show you all. At 34, I'm far from done. And I think we're going to get a reaction from Zepeda on the back of Hitchens as well. So I think he's potentially even more dangerous than he was prior to losing to Hitchens, because his career's on the line.
Of course. Wounded animal syndrome, isn't it, mate? He's just been embarrassed off a young kid. So his tail will absolutely be up. But that will make, like I said, I genuinely think Dalton Smith will rise to the occasion. Of course, there's danger. That's the beauty of this fight. That's why you're tuning into it. It might be the Avanesian Josh Kelly scenario where you think, right, we're here, we're ready for it now. You find out that you're not ready for it just yet. Josh Kelly's gone away. He's licked his wounds. He's dusted himself off, and now look at him. He's flying again. He's back in the mix, and now we're starting to talk about him again in the realms of, right, okay, is he ready for this challenge or this challenge? You know what I mean? A loss here isn't the end of the world. This is a proper challenge. Of course, you can have the comparison to Richardson Hitchens, but Dalton Smith goes into this at the weekend. If he comes up short or doesn't look good, okay, we've got stuff to work on. But if he goes in and blows the guy away and looks absolutely sensational, you can't stop the trend then. You're aware.
Yeah, I'm just having a little look down at the list of opponents that Richardson Hitchens has fought in the run-up to Zepeda, you know, to have that same kind of conversation, that same argument to go, well, there you go. At the end of the day, you can only beat the man that's put in front of you. He's got some there's some guys with good records. Obviously, the Dalton Smith, it's easier because we know we're far more familiar with fighters like Casey Benjamin or obviously Sam Maxwell. But it's easier also to make that judgment to go, with all due to Sean O'Mason and Benjamin and Billy Allington and even Super Sam, my mate, they are of a level. Zepeda is of a level.
Mm.
That gulf, I think you're right. I think it's a massive step up, a massive step up for Dalton Smith. But is it the step up that he needs right near it, right now? Why not? Why the fuck not?
Yeah.
We said at the time, Josh Kelly fighting Avanesian, man. I don't like it. I don't like it. But I'm intrigued by it because so far, Josh seems to be... At the time, Josh was losing rounds and looking ugly in fights because he started to get bored in fights. Maybe Dalton's getting bored. Maybe Dalton's at that level, another domestic opponent. I really do feel like I'm moving on. You know, I'm training next to Sonny Edwards. He's been a world title champion already. We're in the gym, you know what I mean? I want that step up. This is the step. You beat a Jose Zepeda, you're in the conversation for the world title fight.
And I'm here for it.
No ifs, no buts, no maybes.
Yeah, I'm here for it. Absolutely here for it. I like, you mentioned the Ismael Davis and Troy Williamson fight. I know that you're a fan of that. It's going to be interesting to see the reaction from Troy Williamson, isn't it? He's come up short a couple of times recently. This kid, Ismael Davis, has looked really, really good through 12. He hasn't really fought anybody of a massive level as of yet. It's a step up for him. But you look at it and you think to yourself, well, his confidence is going to be there, isn't it? He's going to fancy himself, and this is a wonderful opportunity for him on a big, relatively big card to make it a little bit of noise here, pal.
Yeah, it's a weird one because obviously, you know, we've been around Troy and I really like Troy as well. I like his backstory.
Good.
I like where he's from. And, you know, he's a real nice kid, a hard-working kid. That's no one's given him anything. No one's ever given Troy Williamson a pair of fucking raps. That kid has had to wear his socks off to get all the way here. And he had the big rivalry with Josh Kelly and he come up short. And then he ended up having a fight with Agyarko. But I truly believe Agyarko is an incredibly talented fighter. And I had a feeling for a workhorse like Troy Williamson that Agyarko might just be technically a little bit too sweet for him, and that's how it proved. But it was a great fight. I think it was a split decision. It was a brilliant fight. Troy now can't afford to lose to someone like Ismael Davis, who his record looks great, Ismael, 12-0. But I'm sure about 11 of them were at fucking Leeds Ellen Road Stadium banqueting suite in front of about 200 people. You know, so... Even though last time out, he did beat last mile out at Ismael Davis. He had that big win, didn't he? Last time out over Hugh McKenzie. Statements, gets an opportunity, Newcastle Arena, TV show. Here's this kid who's 11-0 from the small hall scene. Yeah, you know, he's like 27, 28 years of age. He's got a wicked name, man. It's like the Sly Stallone story. Get the Black Panther in. Oh, fantastic. Looks great on a poster. But he turned up and done a number on Hugh McKenzie and chinned him, knocked him out. So suddenly, he left Newcastle from being this small hall guy, and we've seen how many of these small hall guys that these promoters build up, and then they step up, and they get found out. Well, he got a step up, and he didn't get found out. He chinned the lad. So this is his reward now. But I feel like he's going to find out that Troy Williamson has mixed at a much higher calibre. And as you said, very similar to Zepeda, Troy Williamson, a wounded animal, fighting for his life, fighting just to stay relevant. Fighting to keep his sponsors, fighting to keep the people of Doncaster. I think he's from Doncaster, but people of where he's from. Donny? I think so. I think it's Doncaster. But he's fighting to keep everybody still interested. His journey is Troy Williamson. Darlington! Darlo, that's right. Darlington.
I was going to say that because he's
fighting to keep them interested.
Yeah, Darlo.
So I think it's a real tough assignment for Ismael Davis. I like Ismael Davis, the bits I've seen with him, the interviews he does. He's a natural. He's a showman. He's an entertainer. Fantastic. But I think the Newcastle fight suited him. I don't know whether this fight will suit him as well. I think Troy Williamson is going to be a bit physically too strong for him. Set too much of a pace.
Yeah. Looking for... I'm looking forward to Sandy Ryan and Terry Harper as well on this card. Because Sandy Ryan, she absolutely got stitched up last time out. She should have more belts than she currently does hold.
Yeah.
And I'm interested to see what Terry Harper's like at 147, because going up to 154, she looked great. Mm-hmm. I thought she really filled out that weight good. She looked really good when I saw her fight. Nice and composed, and obviously carried a bit of power up there as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what Terry looks like now coming down and attempting to become a world champion at 147. I think it's a great matchup, a really good matchup between those two. It's just a shame that obviously we're only getting 2-minute rounds. You know where I'm at with that. I know where you're at with that. But I think it'll be super entertaining, especially with Terry being a local girl. It's going to be noisy.
Yeah, she'll now she is Doncaster, isn't she? Is she? She's close to Sheffield, yeah. That's her neck of the woods. That's her part of the world.
Just stick to Yorkshire, yeah? Yorkshire.
Yeah. She's Yorkshire, yeah, yeah.
She is Doncaster, yeah. You're right.
This is a really interesting one for Terry Harper, because if Terry was to beat Sandy Ryan, she becomes a 3-weight world champion.
Outstanding. Like,
put some fucking respect on that name, man. And I think this weight will suit her even better. You know, I think jumping up to super welterweight, very similar to Tasha, was an opportunity to pick up in outside. You know, these girls are natural super featherweights, natural lightweights. But when Katie Taylor's got those divisions on lockdown and you've necessarily had a crack or whatever, and it's not really happening for you, different promoters, whatever it may be, then you look at different opportunities. And I think moving up for both these girls was the best thing they did. But they're both more than capable of moving down. Interesting, but this one was Sandy Ryan was the one that went, okay, well, I'll fight you for your super welterweight world titles. And it was Terry Harper that was like, no. I'm going to come down to welterweight and fight you. Two ways to look at that. Terry wants to be a 3-weight world champion.
Yeah.
Obviously, Sandy wanted to be a 2-weight world champion. But when you're in the position Terry's in, it helps that you can go, nah, I'll come down to your weight class. Do us a favor, just put my belts back on the fucking mantelpiece. I'm going to go and try and win his. And if you lose, then you go, oh, well, just get my belts down for us. I'll defend these now. So it's a win-win for Terry Harper. She can't lose.
Yeah.
But then you could argue the same thing with Sandy Ryan, and she got it the other way. The interesting narrative going into this one, of course, is Sandy left Clinton. She left him. She was with him an eighth fight professional career where she became a world champion. She's left him now, left Clifton Mitchell, and she's moved to Las Vegas. So she's left the UK. She's based in Las Vegas. She'll have a full training camp in Las Vegas. That, to me, says someone that realized, because she didn't do anything wrong. She got robbed by the judges.
Yeah.
She didn't do anything wrong, Sandy Ryan. She won that fight. She should be the undisputed welterweight champion in the world. She got robbed by the judges. But for whatever reason, she's gone, right, I want to control my own destiny a bit more. And that means ticking more boxes and making sure that the team around me are built around me. And she's moved to Las Vegas. I think we could see a Sandy Ryan 2.0 here. I really do. And even though she has only had 8 fights, and even for the women's game, that is incredibly inexperienced.
Mm.
Go and look at Sandy's amateur pedigree. It's fucking, you know, she's been to about 4 world championships, medaled at them. Commonwealth Games gold medalist, Olympian. Like, she's done everything, Sandy Ryan, as an amateur. So experience doesn't really come into it, even though, you know, she's only a relative novice pro. So she's more than capable of continuing to grow and add certain bits. And I just think that was a really intelligent decision. Not that there was anything wrong with the previous relationship, as I say, but this is an athlete that's like, you know what? I can give more to this sport. And I think if I give more, I'll be able to show more. So I've got a feeling Sandy Ryan could set the place on fire on Saturday. Even though, as I said at the top, flip a coin. Genuinely flip a coin.
Yeah, it's a good fight, man. As is James Flint and Campbell Hatton.
See, why are you leading the dance now? The plan was that I would lead. Look, you've slipped into leading the dance.
That's what I do, mate. Leaders lead. Leaders lead.
Yeah, exactly. Go on, sorry.
No, you listen, I know that you're going to get giddy about this, so I thought I'd lead. Yep. So therefore you can get stuck into a Southern Area title showdown, because we've been crying out. I said not crying out, actually, because we kind of gave him time, didn't we, Campbell? And we said, listen, kid's turned over, big pressure. He's he's, you know whose lad he is, right? All the eyes are going to be on him. He doesn't have the amateur pedigree of some of these other kids that are turning over. So let's just give him a little bit of a break. Go knock over some doorman and some taxi lads for as long as it takes to get you ready. And then we'll do this slowly. Southern area title, central area title, should I say, sorry.
Oh, yeah, central area, of course.
Listen, perfect. This is it now. You've had 14 fights. You're used to the bright lights, pal. You've listened to Blue Moon a few times now, aren't you? We have seen progression. I don't care what anybody says. Is he a world beater right now? No. But there's progression. We're at central area title level. James Flint, great opportunity for you, James. Go and get yourself a scalp. Go and get yourself a scalp. Go and get yourself Campbell Hatton on your bloody resume, sunshine. Ricky Hatton's boy. Yeah. That's all the motivation you need. Brilliant. I think it's a great piece of matchmaking. I think it's the right time. And let's see what you're about, Campbell. Go on, lad. There's your opportunity. The platform's there for you. A proper title. None of this bullshit, trinket nonsense. Proper title's on the line. A kid there is ready to defend it. Let's go.
25 years ago, almost to the month as well. 27th of February.
Is that when Ricky got it?
27th of February 1999 is when Ricky Hatton was actually super lightweight title. I was there. It was at Oldham Leisure Centre. And the reason I was there is he was taking on an undefeated Scouser called Tommy Peacock. And it was a massive fight. Massive fight in the Northwest at the time. Because you had this undefeated, I think he was 10-0 then, 11-0.
Best of Manchester against best of Liverpool. Let's have it.
Exactly. And it was nine. I think Tommy Peacock had drawn one or something. But basically, 10 fights undefeated Tommy Peacock. 10 fights undefeated Ricky Hatton.
Similar to this. This is 13-1 and 14-0.
Central area belt. Exactly. And that 25 years later, that was in end of February. This is the end of March. It's mad that 25 years later, the same belt could be the belt that actually kickstarts Campbell towards potentially going on and winning more belts. And I would never put the pressure on the kid to follow in his dad's footsteps and achieve the things his dad achieved. But everything starts with increment wins. Go and win the Central Area title.
Yeah.
And then maybe after that, you'll get an English title fight. Then maybe after that, you'll get a British title fight. Just go for it, man. This is what it's all about. It's all about. But imagine how proud Ricky's going to be if his son manages to bring home the same belt he did 25 years later.
Man.
It's fairy tale stuff. Same weight division, same belts. Fucking beauty. And as you say, for James Flint, mate, you've got yourself on a TV show, Central Area title fight. Absolutely go for it. I think James Flint had about 5 of these Central Area titles as well.
Yeah.
So he's experienced it. Usually people only fight once or twice Central Area. James has had about 12 of them.
It's his belt. He's champion. He's the man.
Crack on. Crack on, kid. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that one as well.
For those people that are watching us on YouTube, can you see how quickly the sun went down then? As you were talking.
Stone, that one.
It's just gone over the top.
Jump past the window.
It's just gone over the top of that mountain there. It's just gone. There you go. That means only one thing, Nicholas. When the sun goes down in Vegas, you know what's happening, sunshine.
Yeah, my mate here is going for a cottage pie over at 9-5 Irishman and maybe a couple of Guinness.
That's it. And then bed. Because I'm working properly.
Well, listen, I'll let you crack on because my bed's calling me anyway. So let's give it a little bit of a wrap up. That was the show. That was the boxing show. That was episode 861 of the Fight Disciples in the books, in the lock-in. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back Monday/Tuesday. As I say, bear with us next week. Because of his travel times, we might be delayed 24 hours delivering all the best reaction from all the weekend's fights and especially this big fight card in Sheffield, where hopefully Dalton Smith can claim the type of scalp that will set him on the road to becoming the next British world champion. How good was that? That was like proper telly stuff.
I was, yeah. You just tell him to subscribe.
Oh, yes. If this is your first time visiting Fight Disciples, please subscribe. There's a button over there by Adam's left shoulder.
There you go.
Hit that red button if you're on YouTube. If you're on iTunes or Spotify, subscribe and give us a 5-star review as well. There you go.
There you go. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.